Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Welcome to the Total Soccer Show. My name is Taylor Rockwell, and today we're going to be talking about a whole bunch of U.S. men's national team. I feel like it's been a long time since we did that. There are lots of players doing lots of things. I am able to keep track of a small percentage of them. Today's guest, a much larger percentage. It's Brian Sciarretta of American Soccer. Now, Brian, it is great to have you back on the show.
As always, Taylor, thanks so much for having me back on. It's been too long.
It has. But we're going to remedy that now, easy for me to say, by talking about a lot of Americans for a very long time. I do have roughly 500 or so I want to get to. Not really. a slightly smaller number. But I want to jump right in. We're recording this late Monday night with the transfer window in Europe now closed. One deal, I believe, was like sort of finalized. Still kind of confused. Was Brendan Aaronson joining RB Salzburg in January? Two questions there. The first one, do you like this step in his career?
Yeah, I absolutely do like the step in his career. He put in his, when you look at his progression with what he did between last year and this year, it was really impressive. I mean, he's staying for the rest of the year, which mm-hmm. I like. I mean, I like finishing the job. I like competing for titles. I like, particularly continuing that bond with your hometown team. That's very important, especially, he has a lot of ties with Philadelphia. His brother's going to be he'll be joining the Philadelphia Union first team sooner than later. So there's a lot of good things to do. I also didn't think he was ever going to really make inroads with the first team till the Austrian Bundesliga winter break. Mm-hmm. So you might as well stay around, and you have a manager over there who values, winning the MLS Cup, and not that he ever did it, but and valuing that competition and wanting to see that kind of progression too. So that's all very good. But, in terms of his, he grew in physical size and stature and between his first year and second year, he can go full 90s easily. And I think it's ready for the next challenge up. I hope he has a really good chance to win it. I mean, and Philadelphia's been very good to him, and he's been very good to Philadelphia. It's been a great relationship. And this is how you kind of want to see these things go. A nice transfer fee, a move abroad. Everyone's on good terms. It hasn't always been that way. So this is really good. I think he's going to do well. Jesse, I don't think is going to be his manager for just beyond this season.
You have anticipated my next question of if Jesse Marsh would still be there in January.
If Jesse stays into his third year, he'll be the first manager in like 26 years at Salzburg to do that. And I think big thing, so I don't think they ever plan on Jesse coming back for a third year. He's that good. But look, your first 6 months are a lot of times, they're often the most challenging year, time to move abroad. So he's going to have Jesse there, a familiar face to do it. And so there's a lot of things I like about this move.
Sticking with MLS for a moment, obviously Brendan Aaronson has impressed. Who else has impressed you the most, has either kind of raised their stock a little bit when it comes to the U.S. men's national team, or has already had their stock high, but now it's even higher? Basically Jordan Morris or whomever else?
Oh, yeah. I mean, look, Jordan Morris is a national team starter in an era when the team is getting better. I haven't seen a convincing argument that he shouldn't be a starter, even as, most of these players are Champions League caliber. He has that speed element. I mean, if you look, for example, when Gio Reyna assisted mm-hmm. twice to Erling Haaland, you have to think who's going to be on the receiving end of that for the national team? Who has that kind of speed and stuff like that? And mm-hmm. not saying Jordan's the Haaland level of player, but Josh Sargent's just a completely different striker. He won't really provide that element, but Jordan will to the best extent. That can be replicated, which very few people in the world can. But, in terms of stylistically, it makes sense. You know, I think Jeremy Obobese, I think, is, you know, unfortunately got his game was postponed from the weekend with COVID. But Jeremy's done very, very well, quietly just increased his stock throughout the year. And he's a good forward, too, target forward, great in there. I like it. And, you know, and then there's some guys, you know, who really, you know, obviously Jeremy's probably the starting U23 forward and qualifying. Jordan's a national team starter. But in terms of guys who really haven't gotten noticed yet, I mean, Chris Mueller really strikes me as a good player. And he can, you know, he can pass very, very well. He's combining with his teammates. He's got Nani there. And he's an assist machine. I mean, 7 goals and 5 assists are very good numbers, and for an Orlando team that's that's growing. And Io Akinola is another forward who's moving very well in the box. He's shown me a lot more since his 17 days. I was always worried about his fitness. He looks, you know, superbly fit and moving very well. And that run in the box on the header to beat Mark McKenzie, who's another very good defender, was just superb. So those are guys, I think, you know, who could hold their head up high right now and are impressing me. And then Buzio too, with his move to the six, you know, he's a very good passer in Kansas City's midfield. So there's a lot of guys I really like in MLS. You know, a couple guys are going back and forth now. I'm in the in camp again, like Hassani Dotson. I went back and forth with him. I like him a little bit more now, and so we'll see. I mean, but these are all good things, and I'm sure, you know, there's going to be more names coming up, because look, you know, 2 years ago, you know, Brendan Aaronson didn't make the U20 team, and a lot of people thought that was the right call. Now I think he's passed over guys like Alex Mendez and many others. So, you know, as is the age, when you're trying to cover these people, you have to be very flexible in terms of how you judge these people, because, you know, people's stocks can rise and fall very, very quickly, no matter what league you play in.
Do you think the key for Greg Berhalter, if he were to go with Ayo Akinola, if Ayo Akinola were to go with the U.S. men's national team, is it to, like, handcuff him and Jozy Altidore a la Toronto, so that when one is injured, the other can play?
I mean, yeah, I think you got to look at style and what people bring to the table. There's always a, you know, when you look, he's a backup right now, any way you slice it. And I was having a debate with this with a scout, and it comes down to, like, who do you want your backup? Do you want your backup to be able to offer something different to give you versatility, or do you want your backup to look like the starter in terms of stylistically? So, you know, you don't miss a beat if they go down. And it's a kind of like a philosophical question. Like, so if you take the U23 team, for example, I like to look at that because I think the 23 team is going to be a huge springboard and a transition to the first team, you know, once all said and done. I mean, this November window is going to come and go. You know, you'll see some interesting names on there, and then you won't know what to do with them, really, because everyone's going to be back in the same pool. Where are these guys going to stay involved with the U.S. team? And the 23s is a great avenue. So you look at the 23s, and you don't include guys like Sargent, Adams, you know, the Champions League kind of guys. Well, not like Sargent is there, but like you know what I'm talking about. So if you say Obobese is like the starting forward, who do you want the backup to be? If it's DK, you know, then you have a guy who's kind of plays a little bit like Obobese. But then if you bring him like Akinola, it's very different. So it comes down to like a philosophical question. I mean, I don't think, you know, Jozy hasn't really impressed me that much this year. Like, you know, there's been times he's drifted too far out of games, and now he's hurt again. And Akinola is a very different player. You know, even when Jozy was Akinola's age, they're just very different stylistically. I mean, Akinola, I don't really think has like that, you know, Jozy could always hit him from distance. Pretty well. Like he's, and then on top of it, he could score down low. I mean, he was very versatile in the way he could score, especially his old, you know, Red Bull days. But you know, Akinola's, he's changed a lot from his U17 days, and even when Tab had him with the 20s, he could just move. He's moving very well in the box. He's athletic. He doesn't have quite like the height that Jozy did and the power, but you know, it's exciting. You know, I don't think you should look when you're looking at these young players and say, like, you know, stylistically, where are they going to go? You just kind of have to bring them into camp a few times and then see how they fit in and see how they're combining with everybody. But, you know, there's a lot of good young players in this league. So it's going to be really exciting.
Last I heard with Ayo Akinyola, he was eligible for between 2 and 40 other national teams, but really just the United States, Canada, and I believe Nigeria. He's played for the U.S. at youth level, obviously. The reports I saw were that both Canada and Nigeria have reached out to him about maybe playing for them. How undecided do you think his future actually is?
Unlike Daryl DK, which I mentioned earlier, Nigeria is a real possibility with him. I mean, I remember his brother played for Toronto and Portland and ended up playing for the Nigeria's national team. So his ties there are stronger. I think Canada's just enticing because their current young generation is something to be part of. And he spent a lot of time in Canada, and there's still minutes to be had. I think he could compete for, Jonathan Davids hasn't, I know he's been off to a poor start at Lille, but, I think he could overtake like Kyle Larin, for the second position if he plays well. So, there's a lot of, variables at play, playing in Toronto surrounded by that media, sometimes you always have an advantage, if the guy's living in that country, and living in its biggest city and surrounded by the media to represent that country. Canada is very much improving too. They're going to be hosting, co-hosting the World Cup in 2026 too. So, you don't have to worry about qualifying, at least for that one World Cup. So there's a lot of good arguments for him to go to Canada too. But I think it's the U.S. has so many question marks at striker. And he knows he's played with so many of these really good young American generation too at the youth levels. It's a coin flip. I interviewed him he sounded genuinely undecided, but the U.S. was in first, I think, with him. So that's going to be, and Greg Berhalter, I believe, has singled him out there in at least one interview that I saw. So, I think he's probably going to stick with the U.S. for a little while. It's a long time before he can get permanently capped out, unless he files a one-time switch, and then he's done.
So as long as we're talking about goal scorers with connections to the U.S. men's national team, I want to read for people a quote from one of your recent articles. You wrote a preview of Americans in Action this past weekend. Obviously, you wrote a review of those games as well, both in MLS and in Europe. Of the European players, here is your quote: "There is no American forward more in form right now than Hammarby's Aaron Johansson." That sort of genuinely stunned me for a moment because I sort of forgot about Aaron Johansson entirely. Where is he playing now, and how has he been able to recapture such good form?
I just think, A, a little bit of luck, B, a little bit of maybe his people's body evolves. That's when I interviewed him. Recently, he's talking about how his body's changed. He's worked on a lot of different things. That's all well and good. He's going to be in 1 month from now, he'll be turning 30. That's not necessarily, ancient history. I think it could be a good bridge option. He's not like the long-term option that he once was, but if you're waiting for like guys like Akinola, Bobasi, DK, and Giochini, and Khan, and all these other promising young forwards, maybe Soto, he could provide the U.S. with time to get to that point and provide a still option. He's still very mature, very slick in the box. He's playing for Hammarby in Sweden. He went there because he pretty much had 4 years of just very little playing time at Werder Bremen, he was looking for an option where he could just get on the field and know that there's going to be always competition for starting spots, but one that he could feel good about winning as long as he was healthy. And I know he didn't score over the weekend, but coming into that game he had 8 goals in 9 games, 9 Alisson games.
Not bad at all.
He's been doing really well, and it's never been. You could talk about the level of play, and sure, like Sweden, I think is below MLS in a lot of respects, and at least certainly from top to bottom. And it's not the Bundesliga or even Holland and all these other leagues he's played in. But the same point, he's there not because of he's a subpar player. It's just because he needed a point to prove when he was healthy. Now, when he's healthy, he needs to be expected to dominate a league like that, and he has. So the skill's there. It's just a question of him staying healthy. And the word of the wise, the word of caution, is it's still only been a couple of months, but it just shows you what he can be when he is playing well when he is healthy.
If he does stay healthy, if he keeps this current form roughly going, maybe not at this pace, but something akin to it, how realistic is it to think that he will be playing for the U.S. men's national team again?
I mean, I would bet on it for November.
Okay.
You know, that's going to be an experimental roster, and then you bring in Sargent. And then really, you know, it comes down to, let's say if it's just a European-only, list of players, Tim Way as a winger forward, you know, part of me, and this, you know, people are so looking forward to seeing him back, part of me thinks he might be better just staying with his team and doing what he can to earn minutes.
Yep.
Soto's, he had two goals games in the second division of Holland, and that's still pretty unproven, but in that, this first game against professionals. I mean, Nicholas Giacchini is a player I really like. I think he comes in, but even then it's that's two players, you know, and then for certain, and then, why wouldn't you want to call in the hottest and most informed striker, that American striker in Europe, like at any level? Like, why would you just want to at least, you know, kick the tires and see what's there in camp? I mean, I know Novakovic is there. I shouldn't overlook him too. But, something about, Johansson just strikes me as like a guy that, like, you know, these guys don't have to be like 22 years and younger, you know, 22-year-olds old and not younger. Like, they're, you know, sometimes you have to think about winning games in the here and now, and who can be good for that. And,
yeah.
Johansson's, you know, checks boxes. I just think you can't ignore numbers like that. He's not 37. He's 29.
I know we're talking about there being, like, a more domestic roster and then a European roster, but I do long for one day us getting a link up in midfield to the attack of Brendan Aaronson and Aaron Johansson. I just need that sort of repetition of sound to make my world good.
Not the play-by-play announcer.
Yeah, maybe not. you mentioned him earlier. The other kind of forward who would be in that conversation would be Josh Sargent. He started for Werder Bremen in their 1-0 win over Arminia Bielefeld. I have not watched much of Bremen since their season opener because it felt like more of the same from last season, and I wasn't really sure I could handle that. I'm assuming you have seen more of him than I have. Are there reasons for optimism? Have you seen him improve in these first couple games, or is it more of the same from Werder Bremen? Not much supply, not many opportunities.
Yeah, I mean, it's still over 90 minutes. He's still not getting like 30 touches. You know, sometimes it's dripping into the 20s, which is low. I think he got over 30 last game. He had the one assist against Schalke, and the benefit really is this year is you take the Bundesliga, okay, and then you figure Schalke is going to get relegated,
yep,
and then you just have to beat out one other team to avoid automatic relegation. So, just obviously getting, points against Schalke and points against newly promoted teams like Armenia really puts a team in good shape to be not one of the worst.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunate that's like, you know, so Werder's, they've done what they've had to do, which is the bare minimum, but they've done it for a successful start to the season. He's coming close a little bit. It hasn't matched the preseason. He was strong in the preseason, but it's a learning lesson. I mean, preseason can be very misleading on a lot of different levels. I think he's good, but the goals still need to come. At some point, you know, he's got to look to getting at least pushing towards double digits at some point. The service isn't there. It's tough to watch. It was funny when I interviewed Aaron Johansson. He's like, when he's in the right, he was telling me about Josh because they know each other well. They were teammates, and he was telling me, like, you know, in the right environment, the right service, he's gonna be do big things. It's just that service hasn't really been there from him. But you know, part of that's also too is him learning to get away from defenders and get those open shots too. And he's still very young, but it's tough to learn in a. You can learn a lot mentally in a relegation fight like he was last year, but in terms of where you want to be as a high-end player, that's a tough place to learn.
Much, much more still to come from my conversation with Brian Ciaretta. But first, let's talk about HelloFresh. HelloFresh offers convenient delivery right to your doorstep for easy home cooking with the family. The recipes are easy to follow and quick to make with simple steps and pictures to guide you along the way. They said family doesn't have to be family. Maybe you want to just practice your cooking on your own. Maybe you want to get a little bit better at your culinary skills in a time of quarantine and isolation and social distancing. Maybe you just want to prep that way. Learn to cook so that once you're around people, you can have a big dinner party, have people over, and impress people with the style of your cooking. You could go that route. And HelloFresh's gourmet recipes make it easy to look like you know what you're doing. They've got, for example, balsamic fig sirloin. Those meals are over 60% cheaper than an average meal out, so you can enjoy a restaurant-quality dinner for less and cooked by you. Restaurant-quality, but cooked by you. That basically means you're Gordon Ramsay. That's what I'm hearing. You are Gordon Ramsay now because of HelloFresh. Gordon Ramsay does have a variety of menu options. So too does HelloFresh, which is my favorite thing about them when I've used them in the past and when I use them again. I like the idea of getting to cook things I wouldn't otherwise usually cook, using ingredients I wouldn't otherwise usually use. And speaking of the ingredients, it's nice to know that you're using the exact right amount. There's nothing worse than having like leftovers that you're not going to be able to use in terms of like cooking scraps or maybe a piece of pork that you're not cooking and now you feel like, ah, I wasted that. That's not great. HelloFresh is sending you the exact amount you need to make everything easy, which again, I have always appreciated. And I will also own the fact that when I cook, I tend to add on and keep like evolving the meal and it gets bigger and bigger and bigger. And that's not really great. With HelloFresh, it kind of keeps it simple. So I'm straightforward. I'm checking the list. I'm ticking off the boxes. And then in fairly short order, there's a meal there. That's always very good. Also good to save a little bit of money. If you go to HelloFresh.com/ADTSS, you can use the code ADTSS to get a total of $80 off across 5 boxes, including free shipping on your first box. One more time, that's HelloFresh.com/ADTSS and use code ADTSS to get a total of $80 off across 5 boxes, including free shipping on that first box. Thank you very much to HelloFresh for sponsoring this episode of the Total Soccer Show. Now back to Brian Ciaretta. It has been a while since we saw the U.S. men's national team play a game. From my recollection, which is, I'm being genuine here, this is how I remember it, Greg Berhalter, like, there's a reason why he likes Jossi Zardes. He likes kind of mobile strikers who I think will do unselfish runs and put in a lot of effort to open up opportunities for other people and then ideally finish some chances. I think you alluded to this earlier. Josh Sargent doesn't necessarily fit that model precisely. Are there things that you think he needs to work on or drastically improve to be more of a Berhalter striker? Or do you think Greg Berhalter is willing to sort of adjust the game plan a little bit to accommodate Sargent's other strengths?
Yeah, you know, I mean, Sargent would have been really good back when the U.S. Played under the old 4-4-2 system.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not, you know, it's tough. You got to kind of go with systems that fit majority of the players. You know, if they're all, you can't really, you know, and this is going to be kind of interesting. It's tough to really even talk about the U.S. national team because they like the whole player pool hasn't been there in such a long time and everything's changed right now. But like back when you saw him, like, and you were talking about having, well, you have a number six that's really like a quarterback and the right back that pinches in. And it's like, you know, I always had my doubts about that just because you can't get overly – national team soccer is so different than club soccer. If you're like a club, a club, you can play like that. You can get very complicated because you're with these players weeks and months on end. But when you're – it's like – but a national team environment is very, you know, sprint-oriented. Like – The rosters change from call up to call, from camp to camp. There's always like people who come in and out of the team, and then if you're too complicated, when are you going to take the time to learn how to play that way? But you know, I think Josh is good. I think it's going to come with time. I mean, I think I think just being able to move in the box and get open for these shots is good. But look, I mean, physically he's very strong too, and he can outmuscle a lot of defenders. So yeah, I think his chances of succeeding are very good. I mean, I think, you know, when he gets to the national team and he's getting, you know, balls from, you know, Morris or Gireno or, you know, Pulisic and McKennie and Adams and who else even knows who's, you know, who will be out there at any given time too. That's better than anything he's going to get at Bremen. So, you know, it's all just kind of predicting things that really you have no recent knowledge of. So it's like all ancient history. But, you know, there's reasons to suggest, you know, to think he's going to do quite well, you know, when he gets into the national team environment.
You're totally correct, and yet it's still a strange thing to think about that a player playing in the Bundesliga could come back to the U.S. men's national team and be like, okay, this is what it's like to play with like good players who provide service. I'm still not really ready to feel like the United States is in that position, and yet it does feel like they are. It's a general question. It's a much bigger question, and one I was prepared to ask you later on, but I'm going to ask you now. Is this the most excited you personally have been about the national team pool, or have there been other players or other sort of generations that you felt like this is the group that really could go far? Because it does seem like we've got, with the players playing where they are, with some of these biggest clubs, it does feel like we're at a new level.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think when you there's still a lot of work to go. I mean, because what I've been talking about and writing about is you have the big five, really. You know, you have Pulisic, McKennie, Adams, Dest, and Reyna. And after that, even with Richards starting for Bayern, like, I mean, that was a fill-in start. Like, those guys are different. I mean, they're Champions League they're starters for genuinely and after that, there's a lot of mix-ups. There's a lot of not mix-ups. It's a lot of uncertainty among a lot of positions that are in that role. I mean, you have Brooks, who has been great the first three games of the Bundesliga season. I mean, Wolfsburg's only give up one goal in three games, and Brooks has been a big part of that. But, you know, you have a guy who goes through big swings of up and down, and it drives, you know, I think managers crazy. I mean, there's times when Wolfsburg or whatever, or Hertha before that, was they loved him, and there's other times they just couldn't wait to get rid of him. Like, he's a you know, so you have a lot of questions every other position, even goalkeeper, which, you know, is never, and forward, and so you don't know, you know, it's exciting, and then you look at these players, and then you want to see, okay, well, how are they going to do together, because that has yet to be tested too. And on top of it, like, if anything the last year has taught us is with all these injuries, is that the chances of having all these guys together healthy at one particular time is very small. You have to. That's why everyone's so into doing like these. They're like their best 11 national teams. I was like, okay, but it's like it's science fiction at this point. We don't even know. Like, I mean, we don't know the backups at all these positions. You're gonna have to say, okay, what can the national team do? Let's say if there's no Pulisic, or if there's no Adams, or if any of these guys, or maybe two of them, you have to be prepared to do without. In terms of excitement, you know, look, the 2002 team was tremendously exciting. I mean, you had to throw out the clubs that these guys played for and just look at like the attitudes on these guys. Mm-hmm. Like the attitudes of these guys, they were all a little bit older. Most of them were in their prime, like Reyna, Pope, Mathis. But like you had a bunch of guys like that would just look like they just wanted just to like take on the world, and they didn't care. I mean, and it was really unique. I mean, like Clint Mathis was still, you know, playing in New York, but when you watched him, I've never seen an American player domestically, including Donovan, just like with that level of excitement. I used to go to these games here in New Jersey, and you couldn't like not watch the guy play. I mean, he'd go take on three or four defenders at one time and win most of the time. It was unbelievable. Then he went out and did it in the World Cup. You know, it didn't last. It was lightning in a bottle. But then, like guys like Frankie Hayduk, they had the role players. Like, you knew exactly. Like, the backups were so good on that team too. It didn't matter that Claudio Reyna, the team captain, was not available to go in the opener against Portugal with Luis Figo. Like, I mean, you know, so that would be the equivalent of like Weston McKennie or Tyler Adams now being out, and then still being able to fire on all cylinders. They did. And Pablo Mastroni, who was only still with Miami at the time, went out and shut down Luis Figo, who was the reigning FIFA Player of the Year. So you had those backups. And right now, it's like, okay, you have those core five guys, but then there's the other guys might still be at good clubs, but there's still so many questions up and down the lineup about this team that it's trending in the right direction, but there's a lot of work to do. Let's put it that way. And it's a good thing, I think, that that qualifying is not starting as soon as that's being pushed off a little bit because the team needs some games.
Today's episode is brought to you by Shopify. On the Total Soccer Show, we often talk about the importance of a manager who can clearly and effectively communicate their tactics and then a squad of players capable of executing that approach, but also adding some individual flair along the way. And that's the same relationship you're getting with Shopify. You tell them how you want things to work or what you need to get done, and they execute the game plan, sometimes even better than you could have expected, with Shopify Magic, their AI-powered all-star. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business, from the launch your online shop stage to the first real store stage, all the way to the did we just hit over a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. From what I've heard from family members who use Shopify for their online store, which has evolved into an amazing brick-and-mortar location, Shopify has helped with that growth, and with every step along the way, they've made it easier to process and track orders, run the business day-to-day, and help with long-term growth as well. So whether you're auctioning autographed jerseys or selling custom stadium prints, both of which are awesome, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, up to 36% compared to other leading commerce platforms. And you can sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, the aforementioned AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States and is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, their extensive help resources are there to support your success every step of the way, because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial at shopify.com/TSS. That's all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/TSS now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. One more time, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/TSS.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Yeah, I'm okay with that. With that big five you mentioned, Pulisic, McKennie, Adams, Dest, Reyna, who is the player that you personally like most enjoy watching, that you find yourself making time to watch over the weekend for whatever reason?
I like Tyler. I've seen him play more than everybody else in person, just because I'm based in New Jersey, and I was at the game when he scored against Chelsea, you know, his first coming out game, and then in that friendly, and it only got better from there. But what I like about him is there really is nobody else in the national team who can do what he does. That's, you know, of all the guys that I mentioned who are the most indispensable, it's him. Like, I think the national team is in deep trouble without Tyler Adams. I mean, I don't think there's a way you can find plan B and play the same way. You're going to have to maybe shift to like two defensive midfielders or something, because the amount of ground he can cover is something. The way he can, you know, he knows where all of his teammates are on the field, and he can, you know, he can, even watching him, for example, in like the USL final and semifinals, I was at that when he was still breaking through. He just made everybody else better. And then he went to the first team of the Rebels. He did that. And then he went on to the first team almost immediately at Leipzig and did the same thing. And it's just like, it's the kind of guy who can have the same kind of effect from club to club, level to level, age to age. And don't get me wrong, the other guys are all better attackers. They're more, you know, they're more goal scoring threats and stuff like that too. But Adams can win that turnover, hit long balls, and just that the guys who can cover that level of ground. I mean, he always covers more ground than anybody else on the field in every match, either team. It's really unique and special.
Has he reached the level where it seems like other teams are sort of game planning for him? Because you wrote about the Leverkusen game that they basically did a really good job of forcing Leipzig out wide, limiting Tyler Adams' ability to get on the ball. And I wasn't sure if that was an Adams-specific thing or just a Leipzig-specific thing. They didn't want Leipzig on the ball in the middle.
You know, I didn't see anything where they singled him out in the post-game press conferences. But, I mean, you can't convince me otherwise that they didn't try to focus in on suffocating the ball to Tyler. I mean, his touches went from, I believe, 92 in the first game against Mainz to 40.
That is so lower for people who aren't good at math.
I mean, statistically anomaly. That's unbelievable.
Yeah.
And I think that, you know, he's kind of the key that makes everything kind of go down the middle. And word to the wise, you know, I mean, that's something that you think, like, look, Greg Berhalter does his work, homework. He likes to really look at the analytics of the game. That was one of his first things he talked about when, you know, the first couple months after he got hired. And no doubt he probably noticed that and realized that, like, okay, if they cut off the ball to Tyler, how do we get the ball back into the middle? And then on top of it too, you know, what are the fullback options and winger options that really kind of stretch everything apart that they can't do that? And fortunately for the U.S. team, you know, you have Serginho Dest and you have Christian Pulisic and, you know, Jordan and maybe Anthony Robinson. I don't know that for certain until we see how the team plays, but there's a lot of speedy options out wide, which will make it trickier to do. But yeah, look, I mean, Tyler Adams is so good that I think that they try to no doubt about it. That's the reason why Leipzig struggled in that Leverkusen game.
Not to be a wet blanket, but I do want to, you know, get both sides of it. What do you think, if any, is there a part of his game, Tyler Adams' game, that you think needs to improve or could use, like, some adjustment, some work?
I think nothing more than really, he plays the style. He's never going to change his style. He's never going to, you know, he's never going to be like this giant. He's never going to have like the wildness that, like, Jermaine Jones did in that same kind of free ranging. And I think that's a good thing. You just hope that there's not too much positional experimentation when it comes to him. I think when he came back from his injury in very end of December last year, and he had been out since most of the calendar year, I mean, since starting from like April on, then he was kind of coming off the bench and at center midfield and playing, you know, right back. When he was starting, very little was he starting in central midfield for him. And there's no shame on that. I mean, it's a Champions League semifinal kind of a team. And those are always, by nature, very tough lineups to crack, especially with a coach like Nagelsmann. But, I think it's just more or less just continuing to get repetitions because of that injury that he missed. He's still... His number of starts in the Bundesliga still isn't that high. And you think of what he's done so far with the starts he's had, it's been great. So it's just really just experience.
Yeah.
And that's really nothing more to it than that.
So he may be a little more experienced, but thus far Leipzig doing well, I believe top of the table at time of recording. Dortmund also with a decent start to the season. Watching Giorena get 3 assists this past weekend was pretty fun. I think the thing that I enjoyed the most about his game this weekend was his sort of overall decision-making. I talked about this on the weekend review, but I felt like after the first 10 minutes or so, he did a really good job of knowing when to speed things up and try to play quickly, when to slow it down and try to find those passes. How much do you think he has developed in the last 12 months or so? Because that doesn't feel like a thing that I necessarily saw as a strength in his game, like maybe a year ago or 10 months ago or even 6 months ago. It feels like that's something he's worked on.
Yeah, I mean, you know, being in that kind of environment is special. You're dealing with a guy, though, that really always, even before he moved abroad, was like Pulisic. I mean, like, this isn't like a diamond in the rough. I mean, he's been on an elite path long before he even moved to Germany. I mean, he was always the best in his age group by so far. And
he's a little bit like a genetically engineered diamond in my mind.
Yeah. You know, and it's fun. I mean, it's unbelievable, but like the assists are going to come in droves because he's playing. I mean, having a guy like Erling Haaland is unbelievable. That guy can get away from any defender in the world. And then when he does get in front of any defender, he can get around him, get through him, get over him, get around, do whatever he has to do to get between to make sure it's just him and the goal in front of him. It's special. And you could see that there's a really, really good chemistry Reyna has with Haaland. And you know, if you're in that kind of an environment, you're like 90% there to where you want to be. And but look, I mean, the fact that Dortmund's letting him take free kicks and yeah. corner kicks is a big, big telling sign. You know, he's breaking through every barriers with ease. And to be just 17 years old and wearing the 10 shirt successfully for Dortmund is unbelievable. And look, I mean, what is this? He started one time towards the end. He started three mm-hmm. times here in one. And then I think only, you know, two starts, he struggled, and two starts, he's been unbelievable in his career. So it's quite the fluctuation. I mean, look, Augsburg, I think the first start he had was towards the end of last year. And mm-hmm. I think everyone had kind of checked out because they knew where they were going to finish. This year, everything's kind of gotten a little more real. And, you know, Augsburg is one of the more surprising teams in the Bundesliga, and I think they're for real. By the way, side note, Carlos Guerrero coming out of FC Dallas is a terrific defensive yeah. midfielder. I mean, just like, wow. Like he's a home run right now in the Bundesliga. But that being said, and so Augsburg really knew how to play compact defense, and that was a look that Reina looked like he was unprepared for. He's looked better against like the teams that like to open things up a little bit. So look, there are things he has to tweak here and there, but you know, he's on a track to be superbly special. I mean, the announcer in German compared him to Zidane. I mean,
okay, then.
His body. I mean, you'll take that, but yeah. like. But I mean, it's, you know, at 17 years old and you're wearing a 10 shirt for one of the biggest clubs in Germany. I mean, the sky is the limit, really. I mean, that's a kind of like a path that puts you on one of the best players, yeah. of that birth year in the entire world.
One more quick interruption from me to let you know that this episode of the Total Soccer Show is brought to you by Manscaped. Manscaped just released the Weed Whacker, which is a nose and ear hair trimmer. I have thoughts because I went to a socially distanced wedding this past weekend. I felt pretty good in the suit, felt like I was looking good. I asked my wife and she gave me a very enthusiastic, like, yeah, you look great. Maybe the nose hair, because I do really frequently forget to check that, as well as the ear hair. That's a thing you got to pay attention to as you get older. Nobody taught me that. I really wish I'd learned that earlier on to appreciate not having to worry about ear hair. Probably more information than people needed, but it's the reality. I would say most people, if they go look in the mirror, maybe they've got some nose hairs or ear hairs that could use some trimming. And that is where the Weed Whacker can come in handy. It did for me because I had it with me. It's in my dop kit. It travels with me for just such an occasion in which my wife says I'm more wolfman than man. Took the Weed Whacker, knocked it out, came back out. She said I was pretty again. Off we went. The Manscaped Weed Whacker uses a 9,000 RPM motor-powered 360-degree rotary dual-blade system, which is to say, it works really well and is very, very fancy. It's intelligently contoured and designed to enhance the trimming experience, and it is waterproof, which makes it easy for operation and cleaning and not having to worry about, like, the bathrooms are wet, so you don't have to worry about that. It would be annoying if it, like, had one drop of water and immediately was destroyed looking in your direction, Apple. But you don't have to worry about that with Manscaped. Instead, you can use it and get it done, and your partner won't make a face, which is ideally the goal of getting dressed up. If you want to check out what Manscaped has on offer, you can by going to manscaped.com, and you can get 20% off with free shipping using the code TSS20 at manscaped.com. That's 20% off with free shipping at manscaped.com using the code TSS20. What are you waiting for? Go whack your weeds. Thank you very much to Manscaped for sponsoring this episode. Now back one last time to Brian Sciarretta. All right, so we've potentially got the new Zidane. For people who don't know, Brian Sciarretta is very good at unearthing dual nationals or figuring out that people are dual nationals, at least in my mind you are. With that in mind, any chance there's a USMNT-eligible forward who has the exact build and skill set of Erling Haaland? Fingers crossed, maybe?
No.
Come on.
I mean, we were all wrong about Jordan Sabichu. I mean, remember him when he was everyone was talking about him. And
yeah.
You know, and then and everyone, and I understand, like, I was told by someone who would know, like, Florin Balogun is, like, very doubtful. So,
okay.
The dual national front in terms of forwards is mostly limited to, you know, guys over here, but, Giacchini. I like a lot. I mean, I don't know if we've talked about him.
No, we haven't. You mentioned him earlier. Let's talk about him now. Tell us about him. Tell us why you like him.
Oh, I mean, I like his versatility. I mean, and I think he plays for Khan, SM Khan. I think they're now, as of this, in third or fourth in League Two, in France. very physically strong, but like he's a guy who can play out wide, can play in the middle, all across that front line. I think he's really one of the more exciting young prospects that's kind of under the radar, that I think needs to be kind of on, you know, looked at more than, you know, everyone knows Soto, everyone knows a lot of those, but Giochini would, you know, of that next tier down that's never really played for the U.S. team at any level, or really been talked about in that quick equation, I think is a guy who needs to be there. You know, he has that physically strong body, I think, that you want to have in the modern game. He's not going to get pushed around, but he also moves extremely. He scored again over the weekend in another very good goal. He has really good ways of getting, you know, behind the back line. Now, granted, it's League Two, but, you know, 20 years old, I think he'll be in, if Khan's not promoted, I think he's going up to League One with a different team at least some point next year.
All right, so it's Nicola Giochini. I want to go back to that big five, such as they are, for a moment. I want to start with Sergiño Dest, who, I don't know if you knew this, Brian, he plays for Barcelona. He's kind of crazy, kind of wild.
Yeah.
I keep seeing that this is kind of a tricky question, I think. At least it is for me, probably not for you. I keep seeing that he's the first American to play in a competitive game for Barcelona, which begs the question, who are the Americans that played in unofficial or non-competitive matches? I'm assuming Conrad De La Fuente would be in there.
That's it, yeah.
Okay.
I think you had youth levels.
Yeah.
You had a few, like Ben Letterman. But in terms of like even unofficial games at the first team level, that was Conrad a couple of weeks ago, and now Sergiño is the first guy. I mean, I don't really even include like those kind of games, but yeah, competitive games are really where you measure stature and your value to a team. And yeah, Sergiño is just on another level. I mean, you know, you don't Barcelona even in this day and age when funds are questionable for everybody. Everyone has to kind of tighten their belt a little bit. And when you spend that kind of money on a player, like Sergiño, like you're going to get a shot. I'm a big fan. I'm not a fan of free transfers because, as a journalist, it's tough to assess any meaning to them. Mm-hmm. Like even if you're a player and you go somewhere on a free, the team's only marginally invested in you, and you don't have a – maybe they're just taking the proverbial flyer. Like, Maybe if he works out, great. If he doesn't – but when you get a transfer fee attached to you, you're going to get a shot. Like, that's why I think Ledesma will eventually get a shot at PSV. And, and it checks a lot of – I think, especially not necessarily because they paid a big transfer fee for him, but it was the minimum salary of the non-EU status, you know, if you're in Holland, you have to get a huge non-minimum salary. So when I see clubs financially invested in teams and players, that's really, it's good. If you're a player, you want the team to be financially invested in you. I mean, it cuts both ways. And Barcelona is financially invested in Sergiño, just like Juventus is financially invested now big time with Weston. And, mm-hmm. and like I said, and PSV is invested in Ledesma by virtue of the salary. So those are things that check boxes. I think he's going to have a chance, real chance to be that right back, maybe left back, mm-hmm. you know, if they need, but at least right back for Barcelona, and that's really unbelievable.
It's pretty wild, yeah. He came in this weekend for Jordi Alba, who came out with a hamstring injury. It seems like that is a decently severe injury, so Dest should be getting at least a few starts in the foreseeable future with Jordi Alba out. Do you think he is at that level, like, in your opinion? Do you think he's ready to be a regular starter for Barcelona, or at least this iteration of Barcelona? And I really don't mean that to be disrespectful. It's just they're kind of in the situation they're in.
Yeah.
I thought he looked really good this weekend, and I'm hoping that that is an indicator of what's to come.
I mean, look, that game was not like bringing in someone when it's 4-0.
Right.
It was 1-1 in a game where, you know, a mistake could cost them a point. I think that's telling. I mean, he hasn't even been there that long, and they're putting him into important games. I think he's that talented. I think his ceiling is every bit good enough to be at that level, even if Barcelona continues to improve, and I think they need to improve. But to get back to where they were several years ago, they're going to need to eventually figure out how to do it without Messi. But and so it's going to be really test on these young generation of Barca players to, you know, to know that this is going to be Messi's not going to be around forever. That era is ending. So they got to be able to answer the call. You know, no one player can do what he did. Like, it's going to take like everyone stepping up. So, and the media is going to be out for him if they don't. So this generation of Barca players has to oversee that kind of a transition is huge. And I'm a veteran. I'm bullish on Serginho. Mm-hmm. Now, that being said, you have to remember the last time he was really playing competitive games, back in, you know, towards the end before the shutdown at Ajax, the last month was not great there. You remember you have that image. I forget who it was on Ajax that was in his face. His teammate was yelling at him for neglecting his defensive responsibilities. That's not going to go far at all at Barcelona. At Ajax, they're used to working with young players and tolerating some mistakes. But, you know, a stern talking to like that is part of development. This is more the demand that you're the finished product the higher up you go. But, his natural talent, sells itself. And he'll make some mistakes. But in the end of the day, I think he's going to figure it out because, you know, his upside's that good. But a mistake might have him benched for a couple games, but I don't see him being benched for that long of a period of time. I think he'll always find his way back on because he's really electric and dynamite, and you just hope that he develops on the defensive side of the game. But I think he will.
I'm just going to say this. I'm looking at the photo right now. Dusan Tadic, not a fan of social distancing, it seems. Goodness gracious, he is up in his face.
That was an unbelievable image. And Serginho was taking it, too.
Yeah.
Like, it was one-way traffic. Serginho knew, you know. And look, he's very self-critical. I've interviewed him before and sat down with him before. At the U-20 World Cup, when he made that error against Ukraine, he was the first person out there to talk about it. And even months later, he was still mad at himself for doing it. So, that kind of attitude's refreshing and good to see. And the fact that he took that tongue lashing from the captain was good. It shows that he knew his place and he had to as a young player. And these are things that if you don't do things right, there are consequences. And I think Barcelona sees that too. They're not just going to buy some guy who has no hope of just of ever really being a complete fullback. They know he can do that.
I have a question about interviewing players, but I first want to stick with Dest for a second because we do have also Barcelona with Serginho Dest playing Weston McKennie and Juventus in the Champions League. Again, not a thing I really thought was going to be happening this season, but here we are. How excited are you to see those two go up against each other, and who do you think is more likely to be playing in that game? Put it that way.
It's funny. So they both have Champions League experience, even at this age. It was just different teams. You have two different players who are still youth international eligible, and they're on their second club of Champions League action, just further up the pecking order, which that's even more remarkable. But I would say probably Serginho is more likely, to probably start more games. I think Weston's going to have a role for himself, but it's I need to see a little bit more because that jump from Schalke to Juventus I think was even more. Severe. It was even more of a step up, and I know both clubs have new managers. Pirlo just looks a little bit new to first team managerial experience, and I think that's going to be Juventus just strikes me with the Italian in me that such a tough nut to crack at this age of his career. I think Weston's still going to get 20 to 25 games at worst if he's healthy the whole season, which is good. But it's going to be interesting how he comes off the bench and how he was slated to be on the bench if yesterday's game against Napoli happened. It's interesting to see how he comes off the bench and how the other guys do when they do how they do without him on the field too. You know, you have to see if those guys go out there and just do terrific. You know, Weston, you know, might have to play, you know, come off the bench for longer periods of time. You know, it might be a while before he starts again. So, but that's the life of a big club, is like the guys on the bench can go out and win Serie A too. So, when you go to these big clubs, it's for supporters, they have to know what to expect, and the leash is short, particularly for young players.
With that in mind, let's round out the big five, such as they are, with Christian Pulisic, who returned to the Chelsea squad against Palace, coming out as an 83rd-minute sub in their 4-0 win. I think for the first time this weekend, start to see the concerns about Pulisic. Why isn't he starting? Why isn't he playing? I'm fairly confident there's a pretty straightforward answer there, but for people who are out of the loop, why has Christian Pulisic not been playing for Chelsea this season?
Oh, his hamstring. Even back at Dortmund, there was always seemed to be like a little injury that would keep him out for a couple of weeks, and he'd come back and do really well. When he was on the field, he was a magnificent success for his first year of Chelsea. He surpassed the expectations I had for him. And by the end of the season, before he got injured, after the restart, he was he was among the best players in the world for those 2 months. He was at least the first team all world for that 2 month period of time alone. I think Chelsea sees that, but now they have to be very, you listen to Lampard speak about them. They have to take it slowly. Mm-hmm. They want to make sure he's in a spot that when he does return regularly, he's durable. They don't want to push things back. And then, if you get to someone like Tim Weah and you get a setback, I mean, that could be a huge, huge setback. That could take you out of season. And then when you come back, everything's different and you might have to play differently. And then you're scared when you have to go into a full sprint. Yeah. Christian Pulisic can't get to his position where he's like scared to go 100% because he's going to be injured. So I could see exactly why they're trying to take that kind of approach with him, because they really believe in his upside, even with all their additions that they had over the winter, and they spent a fortune. He's still there. I mean, he's still like that important to this team. And he's a little even different than all the other guys in the big five that I was mentioning, because I mean, he's just done it now for his, I know McKennie, he's had more success for over two different clubs on an upward trajectory. He's in a class to his own in terms of American players. So it's good to see Chelsea taking that approach with them too. You would want to see that, and they're just showing nothing but true value in him with their caution.
Today's episode is brought to you by our old friends, Mack Weldon. Wouldn't it be nice if we could have things both ways, like a zero-calorie cheeseburger, internet ads in March that weren't just reminders to do your taxes, a dog that never needs walking after midnight when it's cold, a Manchester United that is consistently good instead of their current scattershot approach? Well, we tend to think of clothing as an either-or situation as well. People think looking sharp means starchy Oxfords and stiff chinos rather than effortless comfort. But it's possible to have it both ways. Mack Weldon makes timeless apparel with modern performance fabrics for guys who want to look and feel sharp without sacrificing comfort. From their light-as-air underwear to innovative anti-odor tees and versatile yet comfortable pants, Mack Weldon has a full range of clothes that never go out of style. I got a few things recently, including a long-sleeve polo, which I love, maybe the most comfortable t-shirt, which I also love, and my new favorite sweatpants, the Ace sweatpant. It's exactly what I described above, comfort and versatile, but still stylish. It's the type of sweatpant I can wear to pick up my kids from daycare and not think, I'm now wearing sweatpants in public, the other parents will judge me. Now I just think, judge away, nerds, because you will never be this comfortable unless you're also wearing a pair, in which case, high five. Mack Weldon is not flashy. It's just classic, always in style, and made from the world's most comfortable performance materials. They're designed to fit both your style and the demands of modern life. So get timeless looks with modern comfort from Mack Weldon. Go to MackWeldon.com and get 20% off your first order with promo code TSS. That's MackWeldon.com, promo code TSS to get 20% off your first order. Thank you to Mack Weldon for sponsoring today's episode.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Since you mentioned him, let's talk Timothy Weah for a moment. He's played in 4 out of 6 games in the league for Lille, which is good. I was excited about that. Then I looked into it a little bit more closely and realized that he had played a total of 30 minutes. So maybe not the whopping total I was hoping for. From what you've seen, given the injury history, how far away is he from kind of starting games consistently for them? What do you think he needs to do to close that gap?
Well, unfortunately, I was a little more optimistic at the start of the season because they were... He was getting regular minutes. He was coming in like the give or take a few each time, like the 78th minute or the 75th minute, you know, or the 83rd minute, you know, still, you know, enough minutes to go out there and run around. You know, then I guess they played not this past weekend, but the weekend before they played Nantes, and he went as an unused sub, and I could see that game was tight all the way through. It wasn't really until I think there was an 88th or 89th minute penalty winner or something like that, where the game was decided for Lille, and you know, there maybe not, that was not that, that, you know, you want to, if you're going to bring in a guy who's had some injury problems and working his way back, that might not have been the time to play him. Okay, I get it. This past weekend was a bit of an eye opener for me, and not a good way, and it makes you wonder. Maybe I'm reading too much. You don't want to read too much into one game. Like, there could have been like a bad training session, and then you set things back, or something maybe wasn't that sharp, but, and he'll be sharp next week and that opens the door. But the fact is he, you think like if Lille really wanted to, the big thing with Weah right now is getting him minutes when they can, better in low pressure things so that you can gradually work his way. You expect a amount of rust because he's coming off a lost season. That was a completely lost season last year. So you expect him to find ways to get him into games, and that would be an objective with how to handle him. But they had Strasbourg's not a good team, and they had a multi-goal lead starting in the 53rd minute, and they hadn't even made a sub yet. And then and Ligue 1, they're keeping it at 5. So, and then they had they took a 3-goal lead in around the 72nd or 75th minute or whatever. And they still had plenty of subs to go, and they still didn't bring him in. They only brought him in like the second or third minute of stoppage time for 1 minute, and that was like, it was like they had all the opportunity, low pressure. They had that game under complete control, and Weah still didn't play. So it's like if that wasn't the answer, you know, it's like maybe like he wasn't sharp in training or something, but this is good. Like with the European international window, that maybe he can have some good training sessions and you can reevaluate the situation more. You don't want to look more into one game, but that was not a good game, but you don't want to read too much into it and hope that maybe, in the first couple of weeks after, you know, this October window that there's more progress.
I'm also choosing to believe that maybe he just needs Reggie Cannon to help him play better, which is sort of my way of asking you to explain the Reggie Cannon
transition. Nice transition,
transfer.
By the way. Nice
Thank
transition.
You. I try. I'm still sort of confused by that move, even though I've read multiple articles about it. I'm still a little up in the air. So it's moving to Boavista, but then sort of immediately after that, moving to Lille?
Well, look, this is no different than like if the Red Bulls organization bought like a guy that they really like, maybe it's Brendan Aaronson, maybe it's someone else, and they eventually want to get him to Leipzig, and which is their Bundesliga darling that could win the Champions League, and they send him to Salzburg instead. Lille has the same ownership as Boavista, so there, and then that's one of the reasons why his transfer deal is struck, so that. Dallas continues to own a sell-on percentage of them, but that sell-on percentage is not exhausted should the transfer move from Boavista to Lille. So if they sell him for like a nominal amount because there's a common ownership, that doesn't like Dallas doesn't just get like, you know, some change because of, you know, a minor. They want the real transfer fee, not the intercompany transfer fee. So, that's the kind of the plan there too. I think Lil's right back, the Croatian whose name is escaping me now, but I think this is his last season there, and they're looking for replacements. And I think Reggie's on a big long audition in a strong spot at Boa Vista. I think that's the real goal right now, is for him to get adjusted there, get a couple games against. I know the Porto game was tough for him, but granted, it was tougher for everybody else on his team, probably even more so. But you know, his last game there over the weekend was his best one yet. I think he's going to trade. They're trying to get him to Lille, but I think they want to stop in between, and they've kind of paved the road for that with this move to Boa Vista.
All right. I've got two more players I wanted to ask you about, and then I will stop asking you questions because you've already been very generous with your time. The first one is Uli Yanez. He got his first minutes for Heerenveen in a 1-0 win over Utrecht. What were the work permit issues that delayed his debut?
Well, I think eventually you have to go in showing the proper salaries are paid, because he doesn't. And there's always, when you remove from one country to another, there's always certificates and paperwork that has to get done. And remember, he also just signed a new deal with Wolfsburg right beforehand, the one that would take him over the Eredivisie minimum, so that this move was facilitated. I mean, if he's making less than the Eredivisie minimum, then all of a sudden, like, he has to kind of get like a side contract to go even on loan that bumps him up over that minimum salary. So, you know, it's a little bit complicated, but they got him there, and that's just a little bit of speculation on my part what the exact legal work permit issues were. I don't know specific, but those are just some of the most common reasons when you deal with Holland as a non-EU player. So yeah, he got over to Heerenveen. Heerenveen is I like the move a lot. I think that's a good level of team. It's not PSV or Ajax, which, you know, has, you know, their academies are both legendary and produce players, and those teams generally know what they want to do. Heerenveen's a team that can, you know, to compete against the best guys. Sometimes they need help here and there to round out their rosters with guys who can contribute. You know, Uli, I don't think he's under too much pressure, because when he got there, they had 9 points from 3 games. And they still haven't lost. So he came on towards the end of the draw. It was tough game against Utrecht, because Heerenveen was down a man starting in the 83rd minute. Uli looked a little nervous and tentative. I think he looked like a player really making his first team professional debut. You know, there's a little bit of rust and nerves there too, but you know, these are the kind of things that why you send players to Holland, so that they can make mistakes there where they're really forgiving and not make them in the Bundesliga where it can be very, very ruthless. So he's on a team that's good in that league. They're not struggling. Eventually they'll come back to the earth and probably finish top half of the table, not towards the top. So we'll get a chance to play, you know, as long as you're not getting shellacked in that league and you're at the bottom when you're always on your heels. If you're in the top of that league, it's going to be open soccer. And then I think that's what a guy like Uli needs, is, you know, a chance for him to really, you know, do his thing. Mm-hmm.
I will let you choose which player we're going to talk about last. I have a question about Eric Palmer-Brown. I have a question about Tyler Boyd.
Let's do them both, man. I'm up.
All right, as long as you don't mind. No, you've been very generous. I just don't want to take up too much.
Look, Eric is... I understand there's a recall in mm-hmm. that loan that he's on right now. So that gives Man City gives him, you know, they can pull him out of there if they find a better move for him, or if he finds a better move for himself. I think that he's not going to be in the Austrian Bundesliga the entire season. I think it's just about building up confidence right now. And I thought it was against Tirol. It was a very good outing. I really like. It was 7 for 7 in completing long balls over 35 yards. It was very very good passing out of the back. It's, you know, and there's very good confidence. But I think, you know, look, he's been in Belgium, mid-tier Belgium, lower relegated Eredivisie. Now he's mid-table, a team that should be towards the top but isn't. But you know, he's kind of helping him get back in Austrian Vienna. You really want to see that ratcheted up at some point. He's 23 years old. He's still got a lot of talent. I hope that wherever he goes next, they agree to release him to the U23 team because I think he could just thrive and be like the, you know, having him in like Mark McKenzie in central defense would just be terrific for a U23 team. You know, because I don't think they'll get Richards, but like if you get like, although depending on if he ever goes out alone, that's certainly not impossible. But you know, I think if you get like a Palmer Brown and McKenzie, that's a really good combo there. So yeah, there's a lot of things to watch for him right now. I just don't think, I think it's just good for him to get a real running start into the winter and then see what's available then.
You mentioned wherever he goes next. Do you think there's a reality in which he does ever play minutes for Manchester City, or do you think it's more likely that he'll be loaned out a few more times and then eventually sold for a little bit of a profit?
I mean, that's a real, I think the eventually thing is they'll sell him for a profit. How much remains to be seen. For him to get to England, he still probably needs to do more to get a work permit, even by appeal. He needs to, I think, thrive in a higher environment than he's in. Although, assuming, I don't really know how, you know, with Brexit and everything, like how the English UK work permits are going to work next year. You know, I still have some questions about that. But under the current system, he'd struggle to get into England. But yeah, I think, you know, there's no reason why he can't play in the Bundesliga. He's that good. I mean, it's just you know, finding a path to get there too, and doing really well in Austria helps. So I'm looking forward to seeing him, you know, get a couple runs out there against the big teams in that league and continuing to be among the better central defenders in the league and then really, I'm really hoping he can make one of like those big moves, the ones that really says, like, you know, the one that catches everyone's attention, where he's going to play. Mm-hmm. You know, not just say you're with a big club, but to be like the big player on a club that's respectable, maybe not elite, but like, you know, I think, you know, he's good enough to do that, and you just want to finally see that happen.
I think of like Jason Denier, I believe it is, who's now with Lyon, but is like mm-hmm. a Man City player, goes out on loan to a bunch of different places, then finds a home with Lyon, and I think eliminate Man City.
Angelino.
So there you go.
Angelino was
another.
You know, obviously he spent the year in New York City FC, but like, I mean, now you know he goes on loan and he's in the Champions League semifinals. You know, so yeah, there's all these kind of players there mm-hmm. too. That, you know, I mean, that you can not be good enough for Manchester City, but you can do some unbelievable things in football without really making it at a parent club like that.
All right, and that brings us to Tyler Boyd at Besiktas. I kind of forgot that was happening. Here was your preview of their game this past weekend. Boyd has been a regular starter at the start of the season, but the entire team is under pressure from its intense fan base. Intense is correct. And in the Turkish media, to turn things around, Besiktas' opponent on Sunday, Gençler Birliği, has a point from two games, and this is a game Besiktas is favored to win. If Besiktas lose this game, it will not be pretty. Update, nope. They lost 1-0. Boyd played 63 minutes. Besiktas being much closer to the relegation zone than top of the table aside, that is weird. Boyd getting minutes seems to be progress from where he was last season. I guess my question is that progress? Has he improved, or has Besiktas gotten worse, and so he's getting more minutes?
You know, I think it's just, you know, yeah, but I haven't talked to Tyler and you remember that the team had an outbreak of COVID and it just hasn't been like a happy place like this year. I think he benefited from a coaching change. I mean, another coach, this is the kind of thing where you don't ever get used to playing for the current coach because there could always be a change. But yeah, I mean, they have 1 point from the last three games. They are so lucky. Besiktas is so lucky that they don't have fans. I would feel really scared.
I lived two blocks from their stadium. I can confirm they are very lucky the fans are not in those stands.
I know. And, you know, and look at the whole table. If you look at, like, you know, who's at the bottom and who's at the top, like, it's, I mean, Eric Lehigh's team is doing very well.
There we go.
I mean, and they're like in third. They were number one. They were first heading into this weekend. And so this whole week, you know, but look, I think Tyler's a good team, but like, if you look at that whole team, they have some really good players that, and no one's playing well for them. And, But again, you know, you go to these big clubs, you know, there's always chances you take. He knew what he was going into, like the pressure. I mean, because he did so well for Ankara Gücü, like when he first got to Turkey. But the pressure was off at a club like that. Now the pressure's on. I mean, but you make these moves with that, you know, in mind. He hasn't been as good as he wants to be, but he's been more among the least of the team's problems too. So, you know, cause even when he hasn't been playing, like even when he comes up, the team's just as bad. Like it's not a good environment right now for him or for anybody on that team. And, it might eventually be where, when a team like that is doing so poorly and they have some resources, they end up getting rid of a lot of players at one time, you know, so it could be a very dark winter or a very short winter for him at that club.
It could be. I'm also looking at this roster and forgetting how weird Beşiktaş is right now. Like, I kind of forgot there were two Canadians there.
Yeah. I mean, but, you know, it's amazing with Turkey. It's like when you look at, like, when you start scrolling through all the rosters in the Super League, like, it's like, you know, it's kind of like a walk back in time a little bit, like the players that were like, you know, you're like, oh, wow, I didn't know where that guy went. And you knew him very well, like 5 years ago.
Yeah, they all play for Istanbul BB is the answer.
Yeah, I mean, I'm looking at this. I mean, with the roster, I mean, Kyle Aaron and Tyler Board are still among like the younger guys who start and play regularly. And they're both 25 years old each. I mean, you know, it's
strange
an old league. I mean, up and down, all throughout that league, it's always very old. So, and very intense. So, you know, it's not a league I watch too much. I always try to keep an eye on what Tyler's doing. But, I mean, you know, when he's on, it's fun. He's a streaky player. Like he plays that fearless kind of a style. But, you know, I think the question with Tyler always is, and always has been with me, is like, if he's not, like if his dribbling's off, like and maybe he's not striking the ball from distance as well as he can, like what other ways can the player do to win? Like, for example, Paul Arriola, a player I really like, and you hope he gets back eventually. And all right, if he's not playing that well, he's making that defensive run to get back and cover for his defense. He forces turnovers and he puts in an unbelievable, like, he covers a ton of ground. Like I was talking about Tyler Adams earlier, like in the amount of ground he covers. Like a guy like Paul Arriola can, you know, he can win with his B game, like and find other ways that really make a difference. Tyler, if it's not clicking, you know, I'm not, it's you don't know what's there with his B game.
All right, so Tyler Boyd, we're not sure, might be in witness protection given Beşiktaş's form, but overall, we're excited about Americans in Europe. Brian, I guess my final question for you, it's one that I've had on hold since we talked Sergiño Dest. You talked about speaking with him, interviewing him, and the type of player he is. Who is the player, or a couple of players, if you want to go that route, who you found most impressive when you were interviewing them, or who you thought were like particularly thoughtful or thought very deeply about the game itself?
Oh yeah, I mean, and you always appreciate honesty and not cliches. And so sometimes, like the quality of player, you know, and the quality of interview, they're not always aligned. Paul Arriola is one of the best interviews in American soccer, and always has been. I mean, he'll talk about anything, and. I mean, bad or worse, if he's not playing well, if he is playing well, you know, the honesty he shows in his responses is, I think I've talked to other people in the media, and everyone kind of agrees he's a tremendous interview. I mean, and then when he's talking about the painful story behind his dad's death last year, and you know, and he has an open relationship with the fans too, and when he's not playing well, he's the first to really put his hands up and acknowledge it. And, Sergiño Dest was really interesting. I mean, I've interviewed him a couple times before, and then, but when he did a media roundtable, and this is before he committed to the United States, he was in that game here in New Jersey when they lost to Mexico in those friendlies, in that friendly. And they were all doing roundtables. The media was gathering around Sergiño because he'd just broken through to Ajax's first team. And there must have been about 10 of us at the table, And he went around and shook everyone's hand, looked everybody in the eye, you know, and you know, for a young player like that, and showed that kind of respect. And he realized that he had a job to do, and we had a job to do, and he acknowledged that. And that's those are things that like are great. And there's a lot of good interviews out there too. I mean, you know, Tyler Adams is a very good interview. Aaron Johansson has been a very, very good interview too. You know, and a lot of these young players that are coming up now, you know, they realize their words matter, but they're very honest and they're not reckless with them too, and shooting from the hip. But you know, they give nice and honest responses too. And I mean, you definitely know out there like which ones are disasters, and I won't mention any names, but you know, really difficult interviews. But those guys I mentioned are the best.
There we are. All right. Well, Brian Shiretta, thank you for that. Thank you for answering all of my many, many questions. Thank you for being so generous with your time. It is very much appreciated.
Thanks very much. I appreciate it.